and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, August 19th, 2017. We are in Rachel's basement today.
Yes, we are.
In the bunker, or yes. What do we call it?
The studio.
The studio, the bunker,
yeah.
The brothel. So many names and designations. That's where we are today. Happy eclipse hunting, if that's what you're going to do over the next couple days. And we have a lot to talk about.
Yes.
Obviously, there's more fallout from Charlottesville, Trump, Bannon, Boston today.
Yeah.
Whole mess of stuff.
Yes.
So, Rachel, do you want to start us off with what you want to talk about?
Well, before we get into all of that, I just want to give, I guess, an update. We talked about Taylor Swift last week and how, you know, that was going. And she had a trial in Denver for the groping case. Remember that?
I do.
And I said last week and post her testimony and post everything that happened, she's a fucking hero. She won. So the judge summarily dismissed his complaint that she had tried to get him fired. And then the jury found him guilty of having groped her and rewarded her the $1 in damages that she had asked for, which is kind of extraordinary that she asked for a single dollar. And so anyone that was saying she was doing this for money or exposure, as though Taylor Swift doesn't have enough exposure, come on, was wrong. And the jury found that they unanimously decided that this man had groped her and they awarded her $1. as a side note that I think is really cute, this thing's been happening in Denver that I think is interesting in the middle of downtown. There's been what they've been calling post-it note wars. Have you heard about this?
I have.
And so there's like these giant office buildings, right, in the middle of downtown Denver. And they're largely windows. Right. They're like these giant windowed buildings and people have been putting up post-it notes, the little like, you know, sticky notes of different colors and making these kind of amazing pieces of art. Like there's a Spider-Man and there's all this stuff. Right. There's like one building looks at another building and they're all made of glass and they put post-it notes up and they make this like post-it note art to each other, which has pissed off some building managers, but fuck them. Anyway, right. So across the street from the courthouse, there was this office building and they were putting up post-it notes to Taylor Swift. Haters gonna hate and, you know, all kinds of cute stuff. So she sent this business who had been doing that for her flowers. One arrangement for every day that they had been, that she was in Denver. So she sent, like, I don't know, 10 flower arrangements to this business. And I saw pictures of them. And having been a florist in my life, they were amazing. But anyway, she sent flowers to them to just say, like, for every day that I was in Denver that you helped me, thank you. And I just thought, like, not only am I just, like, super proud of her that she did what she did and she was so forceful in her testimony and so unequivocal about what happened and spoke for all the women that it happens to every day, all the time, constantly in our lives and said, it's not okay.
Yeah. And at one point towards the end, she did get emotional and actually broke down.
She did.
You know,
it's hard. And that was the point.
Right.
I mean, not that she did this for a political stunt, but she did this to say this happened to me and it's not okay. And when you take these things to court, you're going to be asked horrible questions. And even someone who is as prepared as I think that she was and as, you know, I think that her attorneys probably went through this with her multiple times, many times.
So of course.
That she was able to do the testimony that she did. Even then, someone that was that prepared, that was that legally armed, that was that, privileged, it was still really hard for her.
Yeah.
And I don't care how you feel about her music or her or anything else. I think that she's a fucking hero and I am very proud of her, and I'm very grateful to her for what she did. And I'm grateful to the jury for the verdict that they brought back. And I'm grateful.
Which was arrived at very quickly.
Yes.
An hour or something.
Yeah. I mean, they just said, yeah, of course that happened.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it was a pretty open and shut case.
Yeah. I mean, it was majority women, but only by one. And so, you know, five dudes said, yeah, probably definitely happened. Definitely happened. And in part, her testimony was key. I mean, she was just so unequivocal about, no, he had a handful of my bare ass in his hand, and he kept it there, and it was horrifying. And that is not a thing that you get to do to people.
No, it is absolutely not. Period.
It is a thing that happens to people all the time. It has happened to me so many times I can't count, and I'm sure that the women are listening can be like, yeah, no, it happens constantly. I mean, it's a thing that happens to you.
I've seen it, sure.
And what she did in the aftermath of it was exactly what we all did until he brought this suit, right? She mm-hmm. said nothing. Mm-hmm. She told her bouncers mm-hmm. and her security people. They escorted him out. Later, her representatives contacted the radio station and said, this is what happened. They didn't demand he was fired, but they said, this is what happened.
And then the station...
Mm-hmm. Fired him.
Fired him, obviously.
And, most of us don't have bouncers or press people, so we don't say anything to anyone. Maybe our boyfriend or our husband or our friend or mm-hmm. our, you know, mom. But what she did is exactly what we all do, which is just, God, that was fucking horrifying and gross and awful, and I wish that had not happened, and I want to crawl in a hole for a minute because I can't just be a human being in the world without someone feeling like they're entitled to grab my bare ass under my skirt. And she stood up in court and said exactly what happened to her and that it wasn't okay. And I'm very grateful to her for that. And I, again, am grateful to the jury that they said, yeah, that's what happened. And so she was awarded $1 and his civil suit against her for $3 million.
Was thrown out. By the judge.
And the two other people that he was trying to sue were also acquitted. Mm-hmm. And that's that.
That's that. So,
that's the easy news for the day.
Well, I have a good segue.
Good.
From that theme.
To what we're going to talk about largely for the rest of the show, I think.
Well, probably. Yeah. Some of the fallout from Charlottesville.
Yes.
Now, by now, I'm guessing most of you have seen the Vice piece, about a 25-minute piece that Vice put together with footage on the ground in Charlottesville.
Talking to the people that were the... Nazis. Let's just almost call
exclusively
them.
I mean, there was a few clips of like victims and not Nazi people, but for the most part, they embedded themselves with David Duke and some other assholes, and this guy Christopher Cantwell, who was one of the ringleaders. He's not the guy that put the whole thing together, but
no, I think he is the guy that.
No, that was Jason Kessler. That's the guy they ran off at the podium.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the mastermind, but this guy was one of the ringleaders.
So was this guy the guy that was the pouring milk on his face?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to get to all that.
Okay.
So this was the guy. First of all, if you have not seen the Vice video that's available on HBO and Vice.com and YouTube and everywhere. It's gotten like 10 million hits in a couple of days. Go watch it. Absolutely.
I just watched it last night and I can tell you, you had watched it previous to us watching it together. And it was blowing up on social media. People were like, don't do anything else right now except grab a friend and watch this. And
well, it's clarifying, right? Because if you don't know what happened and you kind of listen to Trump or you get the emails from your uncle or people are talking about it around the water cooler, maybe you really don't quite get the whole picture.
Yes.
This explains it very clearly.
And it explains it not by people who are opposed to this.
No. This is them.
By the people who were marching.
This is the
torchbearers. This is the Nazis telling us that they're Nazis.
Yeah.
And they're telling us that in no uncertain terms. They are not ashamed. They are not embarrassed. They are willing to go on Vice, which is a widely watched thing, and say, you know, horrible thing.
Vice has a show on HBO.
Yeah. They're willing to just say, like, this is what we believe and this is who we are. And there's no hoods. There's no masks. There's no masking of their identity. They're just willing to come on TV and say, I fucking hate black people and I hate Jewish people.
They really got in for the Jews, probably more than blacks.
And
I think that's kind of eye opening to a lot of people, not to me.
I know. And we talked about this last week and I've been thinking about it a lot. And I want to talk about a little bit about that because, the anti-Semitism that came out of watching that was for me as a non-Jew,
well, surprising.
Really, really shocking.
Yeah.
I'm very sensitive to racial issues in terms of black people and immigrants and mm-hmm. Muslims and things like that. And it was shocking to me to hear them talk about, particularly, can we just, before we get into all of this, this is something I've been thinking about, the Ivanka Trump statement that he made. And he said, basically, I want a Trump, but
that wouldn't give that his wouldn't give beautiful his daughter
beautiful
to a
daughter
Jew.
Away to a Jew.
Yeah.
And that is appalling for so many reasons.
Well, sure, sure. And I'm going to get to a story that's going to be very clarifying about this guy, Cantwell.
Yeah.
There's two schools of thought in the Pepe the Frog meme world.
Yeah.
It's one that they hate Ivanka because she converted to Judaism.
Mm.
And there's one that feels terribly sorry for her that she was, quote, given away to this horrible Jewish guy, Kushner, who's this horrible globalist, money-hungry Jew. As if Trump is not money-hungry and globalist.
The two things I think that were clarifying for me about that was I want a more racist Trump, he said, mm-hmm. right? Much more racist. Because the woman was like, so Trump, but more racist. And he was like, more racist.
Much more racist.
Much more racist.
Tom Tancredo.
Preferably.
Maybe.
Yeah. He's like, and someone that wouldn't give his daughter away to this Jew. And that statement is obviously anti-Semitic and horrifying. But as a woman, it takes away all of her agency as a human being.
Well, I'm going to get to that. That's not surprising. Right?
Well, it was a weird moment for me as a woman to be like, whoa.
Yeah, you have to side with Ivanka sort of for a second.
No, I have to side with women. You don't give, we're not in, what fucking century is this guy living in where like fathers give their daughters to people?
Okay, well, here's the segue.
Okay,
let me talk about this guy, Christopher Cantwell.
Yeah, please.
Again, if you have seen the Vice thing, he's the main guy.
The guy who pours milk in his eyes and
he's going to shoot everybody.
Radical agenda and he's going to shoot everybody.
He's
that
violent
guy.
And he goes to the gym and he pours milk all over his face because he keeps getting maced by people.
Yeah.
And he, and now he's a meme because now he made a video where he's crying because he's got an arrest warrant.
Yes. And he feels very attacked, quote.
Yeah.
Very attacked.
Poor baby.
Poor baby.
Yeah. Anyway, so this might surprise you to know. I'm just going to read the article. Neo-Nazi. Oh, and by the way, his shtick is that he's got a Nazi podcast.
Oh.
Yeah. He's on some Nazi podcasting radio station, and that's his big claim to fame. And anyway, neo-Nazi who says Heather Heyer's murder was, quote, justified, used to write for A Voice for Men.
A Voice for Men.
Isn't that a surprise?
Well, they don't have one otherwise.
Okay.
Men so
let me
don't
just,
have a voice.
Let me just read
this,
you the story.
This story. I mean, obviously, this publication amazing. Is necessary. Please. Oh, my God. I can't wait.
One of the most chilling moments in Vice's new mini-documentary on the Unite the Right rally this past weekend comes to an end when reporter L. Reeve sits down with a well-armed white supremacist named Christopher Cantwell, who tells her, among other horrific things, that he thinks the ISIS-style car attack on counter-protesters that left activist Heather Heyer dead was, quote, more than justified.
Yes.
To longtime readers of this blog, the name Christopher Cantwell may sound vaguely familiar. And I'm sorry, the blog I'm reading from is called We Hunted the Mammoth.
Okay.
Which I've read a few times before.
Okay.
To long-time readers of this blog, the name Christopher Cantwell may sound familiar. It's because only a couple of years ago, Cantwell was a regular contributor to the flagship men's rights site, A Voice for Men, where he offered his opinions on subjects such as Elliot Rodger, IQ, and, quote, rape accusation culture.
Oh, my God. Okay, dear listeners, I'm sorry. I'm not privy to any of this, so if I'm having, like, wild reactions
Rachel
this,
hasn't
I'm
read
sorry,
this yet.
I haven't. This is all new to me, so, okay. I'm just trying to keep it together.
The author says, I didn't write much about Cantwell at the time, though I did point out on one occasion that he was roaming around Twitter telling people to kill themselves in an assortment of gruesome ways.
Wow.
AVFM founder Paul Elam responded to my post on Cantwell by offering me excuses for his harassment and telling me to kill myself.
Great.
Now that Cantwell has been brought to the attention of a national audience, it's worth taking a look at what he wrote for A Voice for Men, which at the time was by far the most influential men's rights website.
Jesus Christ, I don't even know if I can do this. Okay.
Cantwell on Elliot Rodger.
Oh my God, remind us who he is.
He's the guy who was kind of on the autism spectrum-y, who women didn't like him, so he shot up a...
He went and killed a bunch of people.
Bunch of people on a, I think it was like a busy sidewalk in Santa Barbara. Was that where
it was? In California somewhere, and it was like at a Starbucks.
Or was it Venice Beach? I don't remember.
It was somewhere in California.
Southern California.
And it was in, it was like a, I think a Starbucks. And like he just went and shot a bunch of people because women wouldn't have sex with him.
Yeah. And I'm terrible because I don't remember how many died. And
I know.
It's like a blur.
I know. It's the horror. Yeah.
Anyway.
So we're sorry about that, but look him up if you don't know who he is.
So Cantwell on Elliot Rodger, guns and feminists, quote, who demonize men and white people.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
He says, in the last few days, ever since Elliot Rodger's killing spree in California, media has been absolutely buzzing with hysterical propaganda against guns, men, and white people. Should you happen to be a white male gun owner, you might well be Satan himself, according to some of these people. It is a very real threat to my safety.
What? Well,
The more disturbing trend is one I've also been combating on my blog for some time. Radical feminists and, quote, anti-racists who demonize men and white people. I was shocked and terrified to hear Elizabeth Plank say, quote, this is a white male thing on MSNBC, despite the fact that Elliot Rodger was half Asian.
Oh.
So that's his out.
Oh, yeah. I heard this. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And I think he was actually a quarter Asian, but who
cares?
It
doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. The world sees him as a white guy, right? He sees himself as a white guy?
It seemed that way, yeah. Because it wasn't part of his rant that, like, the girls were going out with black guys and Jewish guys. Or I don't remember. It was all horrible. Mm-hmm. Cantwell on, quote, rape accusation culture.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Okay. What do you end up with when you throw out every legal standard that has ever existed and replace it with feminist hysteria?
Oh, my God. Rape, what the fuck?
Rape accusation culture. No evidence necessary. Just point your finger, ladies, and men will go to prison. Because that's how it works, right?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Just say the word and their reputations and careers will be ruined.
Simply. Oh, my God.
Hold on. Okay. Simply bat your eyes at a policeman and he'll snatch up any ex-boyfriend you feel jilted
by.
Are
you fucking kidding me right now?
Sure, it won't stop any actual rapes, but that was never the point. The point is the same as everything else that feminists promote. To demonize an entire gender and engage in a never-ending quest to quench the state's insatiable thirst for more power. So you're working for the state now, Rachel. I didn't think you knew that. Cantwell on women in STEM.
Oh my God. I don't know. Okay.
There's no way women could possibly have any responsibility for their own choices in education or career, according to feminists.
Wait, what?
Everything has to be because of men.
What? What?
Certainly, it couldn't have anything to do with the fact that the vast majority of the world's geniuses are men. Male geniuses outnumber female geniuses 8 to 1.
Okay. Okay. Hold on.
Whew. Oh, there's more.
Okay.
There's so much more.
Okay. Okay.
But this opens a couple of interesting doorways to discussion because there's sort of this meme out there that, oh, these men just they're hated by women and that's why they get so angry. And like there's been pushback against that from a lot of feminists saying that creates this idea that now women are somehow to blame for these guys, which I don't really see it that way, but I see where they're coming from. And that's sort of an argument that's happening right now on the leftosphere. Have you seen this or heard? And I mean, I get where that's coming from. And
so I will say that I think that you insulate me a little bit from a lot of this because mm-hmm. I don't run the Twitter thing.
Oh, you mean our Twitter?
Yeah, yeah. The At Irreverent Duo. I don't run it. You run it.
Right.
You see a lot of this shit. And you've insulated me from it a little bit because I think that that's important because I don't need to engage with these people.
Okay, but this I want to kind of open up the side discussion because it's interesting.
So this idea that what I don't understand even what they're saying. So
what who's saying?
So women in STEM, women are less in STEM because they are...
Well, he's saying because they're just not as smart or scientifically inclined.
Right.
That's a very more blunt version of what that Google guy sent out and got fired for, who's now a right-wing hero.
Right. So I guess I don't know exactly what you're asking me. Like, this all the time, what are you asking me?
let me back up.
Yeah.
In the Twitter world of memes and trying to make a joke out of everything, which obviously we do for our sanity.
Yeah.
There's a lot, and some of it is more sincere than others, but a lot of it is saying these white supremacist Nazi guys, you know, they have all this pent up anger because like women don't want to have sex with them.
Yes.
And then a lot of feminists are turning around and saying, let's stop saying that because it's creating this narrative that somehow we're to blame for these men's actions. And I sort of get that, but then you read this, well, this guy's backstory and his hatred, how this all comes from actually his racism is actually born more out of a hatred of women.
Yes. So that's the thing. I'm so glad you brought that up,
right?
Because that is the thing I wanted to talk about the most today. Is somebody said on Twitter, and I loved it the most, and it's nuanced, but it's important. Scratch a misogynist, find a racist. Scratch a racist, find a misogynist.
Right, right.
And these things are not unentwined. These things are not separate. They're not mutually exclusive. And by and large, I find that when someone is overtly racist or overtly sexist, scratch the surface and you find that they're also also racist or sexist, right?
Yeah.
So these things are very intertwined.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back to stuff we've talked about before, which is that I think that these men, largely, they're men, white men, white men.
When you look at the Charlottesville video, it's 99.9% men.
White men in their 20s.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 20s a few and older 30s. Ones, but
yeah, and then there's some old guys, but you know, they're all white men. I saw one white lady and I was like, what the fuck are you doing
like
there?
One or two ladies total.
But like, let's not get on that. We'll talk about that later. But you know, you and I have been talking about this for a long time, that there's this sense, I think, that these young white men have, that they are in some way being disenfranchised, that they're in some way being robbed of something that they're entitled to.
Yes.
And that thing is, when they talk about history and when they talk about these monuments and stuff like that, it's all really code language for, I live in a world that's different than my father and grandfather and great grandfather lived in.
Or it seems to be changing around me.
And I don't have the same privilege and rights that they do.
Right.
And it's not just about why can't I say the N-word and why can't I grab my secretary's ass and why can't I... It's other stuff too, though.
Yeah, it's more subtle than that.
It's why can't I buy a house? Why don't I make a living wage?
Right.
Why am I sort of on the edge of poverty,
which is the shit that Bernie tries to tap into,
as a white person, right?
Yeah.
Why am I on the edge of poverty? And they're not asking these questions intelligently and overtly in their heads, but this is the thing that they're sort of struggling with. And the alt-right and the Nazis and the KKK and the white supremacists come out and they give you a scapegoat.
Mm-hmm.
Because the answer is actually really nuanced.
Very.
And the answer has a lot to do with what the Republican
Automation
Party...
Automation and manufacturing.
Right, and also a lot of the policies of the Republican Party and a lot of things.
And some Democratic policies too, let's be honest.
Yes, absolutely. Lots of things have happened that have changed the experience of white men over the last 50
to
60
years.
Well,
of all Americans.
Correct. But specifically...
But they only see it through their lens.
That's right. And so when they look at their life and they look at their fathers and their grandfathers and their great grandfathers and they look at where they are and where their fathers and grandfathers were at the same age, they say, like, this is grossly unfair. And then the alt-right comes in and gives them a scapegoat and says, the reason that it's different now is because of these black and brown people and women and gays.
Mm-hmm.
And they give them this very convenient scapegoat. Back in my day, we didn't have that. Back in my day, black people only were bathroom attendants and elevator attendants and butlers.
But now the government takes your money and gives it to them and they all get into college for free and blah, blah, blah.
Now, black people get the job over you just because they're black and they go to college for free, and women, oh God.
Get whatever they want.
Get whatever they want. They don't even have to have your children and they literally are walking all over you. Women are, you know, I mean, so they get this very convenient scapegoat of minority people. And isn't it so much easier to say, my life is hard because these people are making it hard, than the nuanced discussion about why white men are not as privileged as they were in the 40s and 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much easier to say it's these people's fault. So we want to destroy them. And if we do that, then we get back to the place where we used to be.
Well, this all ties into the thing we're always arguing, right?
Yeah.
That in many ways, it is true that we've come a long way in terms of racial and gender equality.
Yes.
But at the same time, as a whole, things have been tougher economically for all regular Americans.
Yes.
But white Americans, many, don't see it through that lens. They, like you said, they see it through the lens of...
They've been given a very convenient scapegoat.
Yes.
And it's so much easier. It's so much easier to say, it's the Mexicans that are taking my job. It's the blacks that are fighting in the streets and making my community unsafe. It's the women who are standing up and taking everything
away. And what drives us crazy is you have Bernie and many of his minions saying, we can tap into their economic frustration and get them to vote with us if we just don't talk about the racial stuff.
Right.
And we say, fuck you.
Fuck you.
I've even seen some African-American Democratic pundits come out with this stuff in the last few weeks. And I'm just like, no. I mean, I'm not going to tell them what they should think, but I'm going to say that is not
my party.
A progressive platform that I want anything to do with.
No.
I just don't.
And I think that it's been pretty clarifying in the last week, too, that when you and I have been yelling and screaming about racism and they've been calling it identity politics, right?
Well, that's sexism, what drives and identity me crazy, politics, right?
Right, but hold on. So they've been doing this for the last year and a half. And we've been saying... Even calling it identity politics is erasure of people's experiences in the world.
Yes.
And is the definition of white privilege.
Yes.
This Charlottesville terrorism that occurred, I think, was clarifying for a lot of liberals to say.
I hope it was.
I hope so. And I think it was for a lot of people, and maybe not enough, but I think it was for a lot of people to say, oh my God, like, you weren't kidding. It's not about economic anxiety, right? The Bernie platform of just don't talk about that stuff. And then we have this happen. And it's so fucking obvious that these things are bubbling up. These things exist. I think has been clarifying for, I hope has been clarifying for a lot of liberals to say, okay, we're like, hold, just stop everything. And okay. It's not identity politics. This is people's real lives.
Yes.
And this is happening and has been happening. And this is the conversation I've been having with people that I know is people who aren't super politically engaged, who are like, oh my God, it's so sad. Where did all this hate come from?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I had this conversation last week about Jewish people, and we're going to have it again today. But we want to talk about all of it, right? Like, Trump did not create racism. He didn't come out of this box and say, oh yeah, fuck Mexicans and they're all rapists and, you know, black people kill each other and then kill white people. And they're like, oh my God, I just became a racist.
Yeah.
No, like, that's not how it works. Like, this has always been there. It's always been under the surface. There's always been racism, sexism, homophobia, anti-Semitism, xenophobia, anti-Muslim. Like, it's always been under the surface.
Mm-hmm.
All Trump did was say,
That's totally fine. That.
That's absolutely a thing that we should be talking about publicly, and we shouldn't be ashamed of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're seeing this uptick, this upsurge of white nationalism in the streets, is because they feel emboldened by the president. They feel emboldened by the administration and by this.
And by Congress not standing up to it.
By no one saying anything. No one's doing anything. So they're like, oh, great. Oh, fucking finally. Great. Like, okay, white people are going to take the country back now. Again, like, we're going to take it back now. And we're really happy about that. And we're going to go in the streets and we're going to do it. Let's go do it. Let's finally go do it. Like, we've been talking about it. We've been meeting in secret because it was like faux pas or whatever to be racist. But it's not now. The president is. Like, he just said, it's fine. So we can just go do this now. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's the problem that I think, like, you know, liberal or even, you know, moderate white America doesn't understand, is that this isn't something that Trump created.
Right.
He didn't create racism or anti-Semitism or sexism. He just said, I'm going to grab them by the pussies and Mexicans are rapists and fuck the Jews. And it's fine. It's totally fine. And that's why we're seeing this uptick of it publicly in the streets.
Yeah.
And it's upsetting to people. But I guess the message I want to bring home is, like, it's not like it hasn't always been there.
Right. And again, back to the Bernie people.
Yeah.
You can't lecture us about ideological progressive purity and then say, well, we can't talk about race.
No, we can't. It's just we have to talk about economics.
It's just turning too many white people off.
Okay, are these your voters? These people? These are your voters? These are who you would like to court to our party?
Yeah, and if you want to be completely cynical about it and just purely political, okay, you peel off a couple disaffected, angry white people who maybe aren't Republicans anymore, and how well do you think you're going to hold on to your coalition of African-American and Hispanic people and young women. People and women? It's idiocy. It truly is. Yes. Bernie thinks he can walk that line.
Yes. He walks it very carefully, he thinks.
He thinks.
And he lost the primary, we have to remember.
Yeah.
That's the thing that I would like to just also bring home. He lost the fucking primary for a reason.
And I can't stop. Well, they think it's because Debbie Wasserman Schultz cheated and cooked the books. But, like, I say this over and over and over and over and over again when the Bernie people keep crying foul about I'm like, he didn't break through with the core of our party. And you just don't want to talk about that. You don't want, so your movement's going nowhere. The best you can do is be another spoiler. And in 2020, you can help Mike Pence be president for another 4 years. That's like the only thing you're positioned to do until you understand that the whole neo left, whatever movement has to include the Democratic coalition of people who, and it's not
fucking identity politics. It's our literal lives.
Yeah.
My literal life. Okay. Like, I'm white, so I'm in a place of incredible privilege in this fight.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a woman and I'm queer. And I can hide, right? Like, I can hide behind my marriage and behind whatever. But ultimately, these people would like me to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not first on the list. Right? I'm not, but I'm on the list.
Oh yeah.
That's terrifying.
Under Pence, you might be even higher on the list.
Way higher. Cause I'm a white woman who doesn't want to have children and also is queer
and likes women.
And there's a host of things Pence hates about me. I'm high up on his list, but for the white supremacists, I'm a little lower on the list.
Right.
But for the Bernie people, like, it's not identity politics. It is our literal lives. And to your point, you can't say, I guess here's what I want to say. The Democratic Party did their big, here's our rollout of our thing.
Yeah.
In the reddest county in West Virginia where the coal miners are.
Mm-hmm.
So they're drinking the fucking Kool-Aid. The party is drinking the Kool-Aid.
And it's not going to be very effective.
Let's go to... Stop. Just no. These people, like, I agree that we need to reach out to these economically disadvantaged white Americans because I don't think anyone should have to live in poverty. And I don't think anyone should have to be without healthcare. And I don't think anyone should have to not have a home with running water and electricity. I don't want any of those things. And our party should be the party to say that out loud.
Yeah.
But trying to turn the reddest county in West Virginia blue by going there and talking about Democratic politics isn't going to win us any elections. It's not effective. You can't just say, well, we lost because, I don't know, white people. So let's just appeal to white people again. Then we lose our soul as a party. We lose the soul of the Democratic Party, of what we stand for and who we are, and our base. And our base is absolutely women, people of color, minorities, immigrants. We are the party that
young people.
Yeah. We are the party that believes in equality and unity and egalitarianism.
Well, we're the party that believes that changing the face of this country to make it more young and brown and inclusive is a good thing.
It's a good thing. And it is. And we aren't doing ourselves any favors by saying, we're going to give you health care, West Virginia. Why didn't they go to Detroit and say, hey, you know what?
We got more of you to register. We'd be in really good shape.
We're going to fight voter suppression. We're going to, I mean, the party has really convinced themselves that there's enough racist white people. I mean, they proved that there's enough racist white people to win elections. And so we're trying to win those people back. And that's not the party I want to be a part of.
Me neither.
I want to be a part of the party that says, fuck those people. I don't want them. And if they don't vote for me, they don't vote for us, and we lose for a generation, I'd rather that than lose our moral compass mm-hmm. and say that we're willing to shit all over the minorities that we have historically always represented and supported, and not always greatly, but we're getting better and better and hope we get better and better. I'd rather do that than go backward and say, well, fuck black people and fuck gay people and like women. No, yeah. And I can't see that as, that's not the path forward for me.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So more on this Cantwell guy.
Yes.
And his opinions.
Oh God. Oh my God.
He's got opinions on quote, low IQ people.
Oh good.
Right.
This isn't going to be racist at all.
A society needs leaders and followers. In men, we see very high IQs figuring things out and working out these complex ideas. They document them in easy to understand ways for those of lesser intelligence in society and make technology available to all of us. We also see these low IQs, which are more suited to, say, mining the resources that this technology requires and operating the machines the geniuses designed. Women, traditionally carrying the role of raising children and supporting the men who designed and operated the machinery, needed to be somewhere in the middle. They couldn't well manage the many complex tasks their role in society required of them without being smarter than the worker drones. But there wasn't any need for them to be super geniuses who could land spacecraft on comets hundreds of millions of miles away either. Unfortunately for men, these women of average intelligence do manage to outsmart and confuse so many of us on the lower end of the IQ spectrum. That's how you end up with college-age males chanting idiotic feminist slogans at demonstrators. For those of us at the upper end of the IQ spectrum, he generously includes himself there, we are sentenced to a lifetime of watching stupidity like this run rampant. We will watch in horror for all of eternity as idiots dominate the headlines with their hysteria, responsibility avoidance, and demands for state privilege disguised as, quote, equality. Cantwell on street harassment.
Hold on.
Now, keep in mind, this is where these guys' origins. He evolved from just hating women to hating everybody.
Yes.
That's not a white male.
Yes. No. So just really quickly, what was the movie about the black NASA lady scientists?
Hidden Figures.
Go watch that and then read that again because that's hilarious.
No, it's just propaganda. They were probably janitors and somebody tried some affirmative action
legitimately thing. History. And by the way, like, oh my God, I have so many things to say about that. But okay, I mean, I think you all know what I would have to say. So let's just go with street harassment.
Okay, and then so I'll just these literally, are his opinions on
literally have like an aneurysm.
Street harassment. Oh, the horrors these American women have to go through. They dress up in tight clothes designed for the specific purpose of showing off their ass and tits to
attract
men. All
right, stop right there. No. 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 I know.
And then ahead. He goes on, when their choice in clothing does exactly what it's designed to do, they complain about it.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
You exist for men to look at.
And every choice that I make in my clothing and makeup options are specifically designed to have men look upon me like I am meat. And then when they do that, I get mad.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense. Mm-hmm.
Cantwell on feminist attempts to fight street harassment. What this is about, just like most feminist garbage being peddled, is giving women the power to have men arrested for anything without any evidence at all.
Okay, wait. Who's ever been arrested for street harassment? Has there been a single case in the country of someone being arrested for street harassment?
Yeah, I've never seen the cops take away a whistling construction worker
ever?
Or a wolf whistling.
A guy who comes over to me and just starts talking to me and gets in my personal space about like how I look so natural and don't wear makeup. Like, no, that doesn't.
You don't yell police and they come out.
Oh, I just call my buddy
away.
And the police and go like, this man is harassing me. And the police are like, literally, they would be like, did he commit a crime? And you're like, well, he's really annoying and awful and I feel uncomfortable. And they're like, yeah, that's not a crime. That's literally not a crime. Street harassment's literally not a crime.
Right.
Okay.
But in this guy's world, it is.
Okay, good. So we take men to jail for saying that. Great. Yeah. I wish. Fucking Christ.
That their mere discomfort, he spells they're wrong. He spells they good. Are.
Well, that's surprising. Because he's
of the higher IQ.
Mm-hmm.
That,
oh, right.
That they, apostrophe R-er, mere discomfort is a criminal offense that should justify the kidnapping of men doing exactly what men are supposed to do.
Wait, what? Hold on. We're kidnapping them? Oh, the cops.
Right.
Okay. And they're supposed to...
pursue women.
Oh, okay.
Turning the tides of this fabled, quote, patriarchy, they feel has so oppressed women over the years into an actual matriarchy in which women can have men caged with a snap of the fingers.
Oh, God, if only that were true.
We're working on it.
Okay.
And then the article ends with, somehow I'm not all that shocked that Cantwell has gone full white supremacist.
Right.
So that's where this guy's coming from.
Let me just... I don't know that for our lovely listeners I need to, but just say for the record, I think, just to clarify, that women who are street harassed complain to their friends.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. If they remember after their long day and it was obnoxious enough to remember when you're, you know, in your
right,
group
it's
chat.
Not your typical everyday street harassment.
Yeah, if it's like particularly egregious.
Right.
Women who are actually assaulted or sexually assaulted or abused by men often don't come forward.
Mm-hmm.
And those men are not jailed. His reality is, I wish was more close to the reality that we were in that women could say to an authority figure, this man has hurt me, please help.
Well,
and the authorities at large would believe that woman and do something. That is not the world I live in.
Right. If that was the case, then men wouldn't be doing it.
Right.
Or doing it a lot less.
I don't live in the world where, as a woman, I can call the police and tell them that a man has hurt me and something happens.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a world where I call the police and I tell them that something, that a man has hurt me, and I get put
interrogated
before. Yeah, I get put through the gauntlet. I'm my credibility is diminished. My, you know, everything that I've ever done in my entire life is put under scrutiny. And I become the person that has to prove that this bad thing happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I lived in the world that he describes, where I could say to a person in authority and power, this person hurt me, and someone would take that seriously and do something about it. I live in the opposite of that world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's Christopher Cantwell.
He's the man that's been crying.
Yeah, because there's an arrest warrant for him in Charlottesville.
He was a big, big man, and he went on Vice, and he talked about...
And he showed,
you know,
his guns.
He showed his guns and his knife.
And that gun.
Amazing. Fuck Jared Kushner and the Jews and blah. And then he's crying because, oh, there are consequences to free speech.
Mm-hmm.
You can say that. Yeah. Don't put you in jail for it until... you committed acts of violence and then you go to jail.
Or you incited violence, mm-hmm. or, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of things like,
yeah,
that's like their argument, right? Like the Boston thing today that turned into nothing.
Yes.
Was there, it was instead of like Unite the Right or like Nazi parade or whatever, they yeah. called it like First Amendment rights meeting or mm-hmm. free speech mm-hmm. meeting or some bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause that's what they're saying is, our Nazism is not accepted. And if we're creating a situation where there could be violence, people are not letting us do this anymore. Like after Charlottesville, a lot of, we should talk about that. Like V-Dare here in Colorado next year was going to have a big Nazi forum with Tom Tancredo and
yes.
Peter Brimelow and a bunch
yes.
of.
Yes. Yes. Do we want to get into that right now? Because.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes before the
all
break.
All right. So there's two things that I want to talk about. One of them is this kind of amazing thing that happened on 4chan. I don't go on 4chan because I'm not a masochist, but
yeah, me really.
But I follow things on Twitter, and the thing that I was, we'll get into the conversation I had with these white ladies later, but there's this thread on 4chan, and I just want to read it really quickly because I think that it speaks to the larger movement and what they're trying to do and, mm-hmm. and how scary it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what it says. Don't get trapped in an echo chamber where you can no longer relate to normies. That would be people who are not white supremacists.
Yeah.
Pretending that Charlottesville didn't massively push the average white person away is really stupid. We have a chance to actually make changes now that Trump has shifted the Overton window to the right, but we need to be smart and make the movement appealing to the average white person. Disavow all Nazi and KKK edgelord LARPers. There's no way to lose public support more quickly than going around making Nazi salutes and holding wiki torches while chanting, "Jews will not replace us." This instantly makes the average white person hate you. Build a populist movement with realistic, incremental, overt goals. For example, repealing the 1965 Immigration Act and replacing it with something that both limits total immigration and prioritizes white immigration is an actual, tangible political goal.
Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what they're trying to do.
Keep the long-term goals covert and don't ever reveal your power level. Talking openly about a white ethnostate only leads to failure and average public turning against you. So disavow anyone who reveals the actual power level. Leftists will recognize our dog whistles and know that we're crypto, but normies won't listen to them. Start first by focusing on multiculturalism, because it's a lot easier for people to see how non-white countries produce culture that is at odds with our values. People like Peter Thiel should be the voice of the alt-right, not cringelords like Richard Spencer. Hold actual speeches with the media invited by intelligent and well-spoken speakers that can tailor their speech to the average person who has been brainwashed by egalitarianism their entire life. Get pro-white people into media and educational positions. Examine and copy the successful tactics of cultural Marxists. Liberal morality is deeply embedded in modern society, and it's going to take a long time to change it. If you actually want to gain mainstream appeal, the movement has to change to be positive and not just LARPing as KKK and Nazis. So the next time someone tells me, like, these people are just like backwood country folk that don't know shit, they have a fucking plan.
They do, but I don't think it's going to be very successful because the people in their ranks want to carry tiki torches and yell about Jews. That's what's fun.
That's what's fun.
It's not fun doing the quiet, undercover covert. I mean, that's what Jeff Sessions is doing.
That's exactly right.
And a lot of those talking points kind of fall over into the Venn diagram of the whole Bernie thing. I mean, not the like immigration stuff, but you know, there's a lot of uncomfortable crossover there for me.
There is for me too. And that's something that I think we as white liberals need to really think about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is some uncomfortable crossover with not like specifically choosing not to talk about race and not to talk about gender and not to talk about Islamophobia, like choosing to not do that and choosing instead to talk about economics is a choice that I'm uncomfortable with because it feels very much like that's something that the person who wrote that would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely it is.
And that's not a place where I'm comfortable being.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we got to talk about Bannon going away. Yeah. And we'll talk about some of the president's economic councils that all dissolved in the wake of this. And
so many things.
What maybe happens now. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Welcome back to Reverend Testimony, recapping the week that was. Shout out to Armando of Daily Coast, one of the main editors there and frequent guest of K-Grow in the Morning. And his two teenage daughters went out to the counter protest in Boston today, which we'll talk about briefly. And they're okay, everything was fine. I mean, there were some skirmishes and a little bit of violence there. And okay. for a hot second, cops turned into cops and started throwing some people around. But it was just some minor things from what I've read.
Okay.
Fox News played a clip over and over of some Trump lady waving an American flag in people's faces. Then somebody like dragged her around in the street for a minute. And so Fox is playing that clip on a nonstop loop because okay. Antifa, Black Lives Matter, scary people come to get you. Other than that, basically what happened in Boston was literally about 20 Nazis showed up and about at least 20,000. Now I'm reading as many as 35 or 40,000 anti-Nazis showed up to say, fuck you, Nazis, go away.
I love them all.
So that's probably what it's going to look like in most major cities when they keep trying to do this, which means they're not going to keep trying to do this because, as Rachel and I discussed before the podcast,
yes.
here's the thing about these neo-Nazis. Yes. I think they were actually taken a little aback by what the response to Charlottesville, not only in Charlottesville, but the rest of the country now, yeah. and seeing statues being toppled. Like Bannon can puff his chest and say, well, this is great. I hope they tear down all the statues. And we'll get to him in a second. But like those people are like, ooh, shit, these people are pissed off. Yeah, maybe I'm not going to do this after all.
Maybe
like,
my Saturday is better spent somewhere else. Right. That sounds kind of scary.
It's not like the protesters in Ferguson or the people on the Edmund Pettus Bridge or.
Right.
Because.
No.
And explain why, Rachel. Well. why the nice young white men in their Trump outfits might not show up as much in mass now. Going
well,
forward.
The reason for that is that they have never experienced real oppression.
No. They like to say they have.
Yes.
And think they have.
They think they have. They really do believe, I think, some of them, that they really have experienced real oppression as white men.
Right.
Young white men.
Because women on the street can point them out and be arrested if they look at you. Yeah,
and
black
they can
people
just call the cops
jobs.
And these people just get arrested. And
right.
black people just get to do whatever they want. And it's just a horrible world. But real oppression has never been experienced by these people.
Right.
And so what they're protesting isn't actually for their lives. And the people that are protesting against them are actually protesting for their actual lives.
Right. So in Ferguson, when you see a person of color go up to a cop and potentially get their head bashed in, it's because at that point they have nothing to lose.
That's right. Because they literally are fighting for their lives. They're
yes.
fighting for
their
humanity,
existence.
Their existence in this world. And they
and,
fight.
And we can't relate to that. We can sympathize with it. We can't actually empathize with it.
No.
We have not been in a position where we had
no.
to go out on the street and yell at the cops.
No.
I have a right to exist, motherfucker.
You don't have a right to kill me for no reason.
Right. And then get our head bashed in because we have nothing to lose.
When you are in a position where you literally have nothing, you are fighting for your humanity and your existence in the world, you fight. When you're a white guy who's like, it's really not fair how like I've been mistreated by the fake news media. Oh, there's people that are going to be mad. I don't want to go
yeah.
to that.
Oh, they maced that guy? That is painful.
I don't want to put milk on my face. I'm just going to, why don't we go to a barbecue, babe? You know? And so.
And then we'll all talk about the race war.
Yeah, we can talk about online. We can do that. We can be
I've got so many memes, you guys.
You guys, I have so many memes. And
so
I'm
many
really
Pepe
fired
the Frog
up.
Memes,
but like,
and I'm
going to
own the Jews so bad.
Because it's not actually about fighting for your life.
No.
It's about fighting for something that you think is happening that's not happening.
So my prediction is, and I could be wrong about this, because remember, all the like a lot of the guys in Charleston, because before, like when things were, there was that night of protests and then the mm-hmm. morning, they were like, mm-hmm. you ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah.
We are coming out everywhere and we're going to be taking back the streets. And I think you're going to see more what you see in Boston, like in... Oh, a big rally. We're going to hold yes. it. And then like five people will show up and 5,000 anti-people
yes.
will show up ready
yes.
to
yes. I hope
rip
so.
These people apart. And they're just not going to
They're just
do
not
going to
go because they aren't fighting for their lives because right. they aren't actually oppressed.
No.
If they knew what oppression was and what oppression felt like.
They would do
they
it.
They would go.
Yeah.
But they
no
don't.
Matter what.
They don't.
They don't.
Because they don't know what oppression is and what it feels like because they've never been oppressed.
Yeah.
That's the truth of being white is you haven't been oppressed. You've yeah. never been oppressed. And if you can't look at that and see it and understand it, then yeah, that's why. And I would, can I segue into the conversation I had last night?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm not naming names or anything, but I was having this conversation with these three middle-aged white ladies last night. And it was illuminating and a little bit terrifying. I'm really used to dealing with people like you, dear listener, and Travis and Dana and Brenna, you know, people on our side. And I'm really used to dealing with Trump supporters. Mm-hmm. And I was led into a bubble last night of Hillary supporting white ladies who are very upset about this Charlottesville thing. Mm-hmm. And racism. And they'd really like to do something about it. And they don't know what to do. And I will tell you that, you know, we talk a lot on this podcast about the work to be done by white people by talking to other white people. Mm-hmm. And I was led into this bubble that was a little terrifying for me because I knew that these people existed and that they didn't really understand a lot of things and they needed to be a little educated, but it was astounding to me. So these were three white ladies drinking wine on a Friday night. One a divorcee, one single with no kids, one married with kids. And they were all in their mid to late 40s. Mm-hmm. And they all were professionally secure, upper middle white class, right? And I knew one of them prior to this conversation, and she said to the other two, "Oh my gosh, Rachel knows all about politics." And we start talking, and they said, "Well, we've just been crying all week. Just been crying all week." And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Well, because for the country, everything is just, why is there so much hate now?" And we had this long, meandering, 3-hour conversation in which their first idea was to, this was a thing that was going to happen before I stepped in. They were going to go to a black church on Sunday and they were going to hug everyone and say, "I'm sorry." That was their plan for racial justice and unity, was to go to a black church as white ladies in their 40s and hug people. And I emphatically urged them not to do that. And they did not like me very much throughout the conversation, but they listened. And I told them that doesn't make anything different. Black people know. They know. They don't need you to tell them anything. And they don't need you to hug them. And they don't need you to say that you're sorry. That doesn't help their daily life, right? That doesn't help them not... That doesn't help anything. That makes you feel better. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't help them. Black people don't need to hear from you right now. What they need is for you to talk to other white people.
Right.
And talk to your friends and your coworkers and talk to other people about how upset you are about what's been going on. And if you don't have the right language, like, I can help you talk about some things, like, we can talk, but please don't go to black churches and talk to black people about how upset you are. That doesn't help them. That's not helpful, and it just makes you feel better, and it doesn't help them and their lives and white supremacy go away. It doesn't do anything. It just makes you feel like you did something nice.
It makes you put in a position where, well, I don't want these people to think I'm like that.
Right.
It's not about you.
This is nothing. Stop. This is not. Please don't talk to black people in your life. Please don't talk to people of color. Just leave them the fuck alone. Their job is to survive this. Your job is to fucking fix it. Mm-hmm. And so we had this very long conversation, and there were some very rough moments, and a couple of them I'm just going to point out quickly because this is the kind of thing that is the conversation you have to have with these people. And I'll be honest, like I said, like, I'm used to, like, either dealing with, like, Trump supporters, which I know how to talk to Republicans, and I know how to talk to people like us. Mm-hmm. But I was in this weird bubble of, like, 40-year-old white women who supported Hillary, and man, is that bubble intense, and man, is it hard to break through. And it was very educational for me and also makes me understand the battle that we're up against.
Right.
So I was explaining to them that white women voted for Trump And they were absolutely, no.
A majority of white women.
Yeah, a majority.
Small majority, but a majority.
A small majority of white women voted for Trump.
53-47, I think.
Yeah. But that's a fact. And I got so much pushback that they were like looking on their phones and trying to find the facts and trying to find the figures, and they really couldn't do it. And so eventually I had to pull it up, and then they were like, well, I don't believe that. Like, they were like, I refuse to believe that that's true.
They couldn't handle the fact that their peers, so many of their peers.
That's right.
Went in that direction.
Yes. And so we had a long conversation about, like, your refusal to believe it is part of why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
Your refusal to believe that that's possible. You, it's not, please don't become the people that say fake news, mm-hmm. right? The facts are the facts. And this was what happened. And we have to.
This is why you have to talk to your peers.
That's right. And we as white women have to talk to other white women and white men and white people in general about this, because we have to acknowledge that that happened, and then we have to fix that that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to do that is to talk to people. And then the conversation, you know, I was telling them, like, they just kept saying before this conversation, what, I just don't know what to do. I'm just so sad. I just keep crying because the hate, where did it come from? Where did it come from? And I'm like, no, right? Like I said before, it was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, well, here's some solid steps that you can take. Here's things that you can actually do. And they were like, no, I can't talk about politics at work. And I said, okay, talk about politics outside of work. Well, I can't talk about politics at happy hour. And I said, yeah, you can. You absolutely can. That's exactly the place to do it. That's mm-hmm. where you start these conversations with your peers who probably voted for Donald Trump.
Some of them.
Maybe.
Yeah.
The ones that did. Even the ones that didn't.
Or the ones that didn't vote at all.
It doesn't matter.
Because, oh, I just didn't like either candidate.
The conversation about white supremacy in this country isn't just about who voted for Trump. It's about all white people and white people acknowledging the racism and the institutional structural racism that exists in this country. Whether you voted for Barack Obama or Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, I don't care. White people have to start talking to other white people about institutional and structural racism and how it affects people of color. And so it's not really about the election. It's about engaging other white people and saying, this is a thing that's happening. This is a thing that's been happening. This is the thing that we need to fix.
Right.
And if you can't do that at happy hour, then don't talk to me about how you're crying about Charlottesville.
Right.
Like, that's a responsibility that we bear as white people. We colonialized this country. We murdered hundreds of thousands of Native Americans. We enslaved millions of black people. We put to basically labor death hundreds of thousands of Chinese workers for railroads. I mean, we are a country that is built on blood and death and torture and slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And as white people, we have to own up to that and acknowledge it and talk to other white people about how that has affected our history and where we are now. And where we are now is a very scary place. And the only way that we're going to get anywhere is by talking to other white people and saying, hey, this is what's happening. And this is, you know, it's, I use this example. White women are women, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they experience sexism. So I can use this example of sexism and I can say to them, you know, this thing happened to me. I use an example. I used to be a wedding planner and I was working an event with my husband who came with me to just help. He's a chemical engineer. And we were standing outside and a wedding guest was talking to us about, like, oh, you know, I wanted to buy this property and I wanted to turn it into a wedding venue. And he's talking to my husband and my husband says, oh, no, I'm just here to help. She's the wedding expert. You should talk to her. And he looks at him and then he just continues to talk to Dana. And he says, well, you know, here's what we were thinking. And what do you think about this? And what do you think about that? What do you think about this? And Dana was like, I literally just told you, like, I don't know. I'm just here to help. She knows everything. Talk to her. And he was like, yeah, yeah. But, you know, and continues to talk to Dana. And finally, Dana was like, dude, I'm not trying to be a dick. Like, and I'm working this event, but, like, this is pretty, like, bare sexism that you're doing right now. Like, I've told you twice that the person standing next to me is the expert, and I am not an expert. I don't know anything about the wedding industry, but you keep talking to me and not to her, and it's really sexist because you assume that I'm the person in charge, and mm-hmm. I'm not. She knows everything, and I know nothing, so talking to me is useless. You should talk to her, and you not doing that is pretty sexist. So I tell this to these women, and his response was like, oh, I wasn't trying to do that. I didn't assume anything. I don't really, you know, whatever. And what I said to them was, had I spoken up in that moment at any point and said, hey, I'm the one in charge. I know everything. Why are you talking to him? If I had said something, I would have been the crazy, irrational, hysterical woman yelling and being extreme.
Right.
But in that moment, he said to this other man, you're being really sexist. You've talked to me now 3 times when I've said to talk to her. And he listened and he was like, oh shit. And he was a little defensive, but then he was like, ask me questions, which I didn't really want to answer at that point, but whatever. Like the point is he could hear Dana say, dude, it's like the 3rd time I've told you to talk to the woman in the room and you still keep deferring to me and it's uncomfortable. Like, stop. And the guy heard him and started talking to me. That, and so I'm telling this to these women and they're like, Oh my God. Right. That happens all the time. And I'm like, yes. Right. Like that's an experience that you can relate to.
Right.
Now relate that to black people. When you hear a white person say something that is even casually racist, right? Like, or you get into a discussion about racism or race in general, the black person in the room is not going to be heard. They're going to be heard as, oh, you, everything's racist and you're racist and everything's this lens of racism, blah, 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 right? If a white person says to you, that's fucking racist and here's why, you're going to be heard. So I'm asking these women to be that white person in the room and say, that's racist, don't say that, and here's why, right? I'm asking all of you to do that. And for all the women listening, I hope that that made sense. And for all the minorities listening and for all the people, the white people listening, I hope that you can relate that in some way, even if you're not a woman. But they can't hear me as a woman, men. Mm-hmm. They can hear another man. White people can't hear black people in the same way that they can hear us. They can hear me because I'm white and I'm like, no, that's fucking racist. And here's why. And they can hear me, but they can't hear the black person and it's fucking not their job. So I'm asking these white women to step forward and do their job. And they're like, it's very uncomfortable. I don't know how I would do that. Well, how would I talk to Jim? And it's like, well, you know, Cindy, I don't know how you'd talk to Jim, but do you expect your black coworker to talk to Jim? Is that going to be more effective? No, it's not going to be more effective. Jim's going to listen to you. He's not going to listen to your black friend. He's not. It's your fucking job. It's our job as white people to talk to other white people about this shit. Because we're the only ones that can be heard.
Just like it's men's job to talk to other men about sexism.
Exactly like I said, right? Dana could tell that guy, that's sexist. If I had said to him, you're being sexist, he would have been like, ugh, crazy women. Mm-hmm. But he heard Dana. So men talk to men about sexism. White people talk to white people about racism.
Seems straightforward enough, but it can be difficult.
It is, and it's uncomfortable.
Right. And, you know, some people you're not going to change their mind or turn them, and this is happening with families.
It is.
At living rooms everywhere. And
yes, including mine.
We've talked about. Anyway, pivoting to Steve Bannon.
Yes.
Steve Bannon's out.
Yes.
This has been in the works for a few weeks. People kind of figured as part of mostly Kelly and McMaster's attempted purge at all the flotsam and jetsam surrounding the White House. And by that afternoon, he was back leading executive boardroom meetings.
Literally,
at
like a couple hours later, right?
A couple hours later.
Yeah.
So Bannon's back at Breitbart. All kinds of different takes on how he left, why he left, what this means now. Is Breitbart going to war against Trump? Are they going to go to war against mainstream Republicans? Or are they going to go to war?
Just stay at war with race people war, of color? Who knows?
I think people maybe overvaluing. It's not like Breitbart stopped being Breitbart when Bannon left for the White House.
No, but I do think that his particular I watched a thing about how Breitbart got started and like his role in all of that, and like the the Breitbart like little house that they had and all of that stuff back in the '80s. And I do think that he's like a pretty like forceful figure within that organization.
Of course, yeah.
And him coming back may make it, because I haven't heard much from them lately. Like,
well, before Bannon got fired, this interesting story kind of flew under the radar about this house that Bannon owned or rented
in
Florida. In Miami.
Yeah, yeah.
It was in Miami.
Yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And it was a supposedly a drug infested meth porn house.
Yes.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. You and I went back and forth on it a little bit.
No, we really went back and forth. I have no idea if it's true or not. The only reason I wouldn't dismiss it out of hand is that living in Miami, I knew literally firsthand of houses just like this.
Right. Like you witnessed them.
In nice parts of town, like expensive houses where like you can drive by and like see the porn scenes happening through the open shades.
Right.
And
right.
Cars all hours of the night, people that were obviously drug dealers.
Yeah. Like none of the content of the story surprised me, and I would not, none of it would surprise me if it was true, given just looking at him and like,
yeah, the reason I'm not going to dwell on too much, it's salacious and not necessarily that important.
Right.
If there's a Nazi in the White House, I don't care if he uses meth or not.
Or
what difference
has
does it
porn
make?
Shoots in his house? Yeah. I don't care. Right. I don't. Yeah. He's a fucking Nazi. So he's bad. Yeah. Like who cares?
Yeah. I was going to read it and then I'm like, eh, it's kind of pointless. I mean,
I think what you know, I would say about his departure is that there's been a lot of coverage about like, oh, well, he was like this, like, you know, he was this. He tried to make himself the Karl Rove, essentially, of the Trump presidency, right? The same way that Karl Rove was of W. And
but
I just don't
really
think that's
do
true.
Anything.
It's not really true. He really wanted to make it seem that that was true. But by all reporting, doesn't seem like that's actually true.
No, he had all these grandiose ideas and plans and all the whiteboard stuff. But in reality, very little of it ever came close to going into fruition. I mean, he helped write the Muslim ban, which got smacked down by the courts.
Multiple
and now a
times.
Very watered down version of it might go through sort of. And Sessions is in there now. And I'm sure Bannon's happy about that. But Sessions can do that on his own. He doesn't need Bannon.
Well, and Trump's
to be
pissed
Sessions.
At him, so who cares?
Yeah, right.
Because he recused himself, which is the reason for Mueller, which is nonsense. But so, like, really, what his job was in the White House was to call press organizations and say, I'm in charge.
And he wanted to get rid of all the trade deals. That really didn't happen. I mean, they're reworking NAFTA, but they haven't gutted it. Everybody wanted TPP dead, even the Democrats.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, what did he actually do?
Nothing.
And nothing. The answer is kind of, not much. I mean, he was sort of the alt-right, if you want to call it intellectual, force in the White House. But in terms of actual policy, like if he was responsible for the messaging and the tone, okay, great job. That's really worked out well.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, I don't know. And I think Bannon, like Trump, has this massive ego and probably thinks he's more influential than he is.
Wanted to make it seem like optics.
Well, and
wanting to make it seem like he was controlling things.
And that's partially why he got fired. I mean, yes, there's been a lot of pressure from Kelly and Mattis and McMaster to cut him loose, but I think he knew he was on the way out, and then everybody's going to try to analyze, because we haven't talked about the call to
the American Prospect. Okay, please talk about this, because I have been in... I've been very busy lately, let's just say that.
So and the other night, so, I think it was the night before he got canned,
It was a couple days before, but yeah.
Called Scaramucci style a reporter named Robert Kuttner from the American Prospect, as a left-leaning magazine, and spouted all this crap and supposedly came out with the story. Oh, I didn't know it was an interview.
What
did
he say about North Korea? Wasn't that the big...
He said, like, there is no military option in North Korea. It's pointless. We can't really... We're not going to go to war there. Of course, you can't say that, especially when... If there is, I don't know if there is a strategy that Trump is using, but if there is, it's certainly like, oh, we can do this and you better.
Well, that's what they're saying publicly, right?
Right.
Like that was not a strong enough statement, and force and fire and fury and all the things. So
you can't undermine the president by saying, it's all bluster. You can't do that.
But he did.
But he did.
Now, as we talked about earlier, you and I privately, I believe Scaramucci's dumb. and maybe didn't know, like, it was a friend of his or something.
No, he wasn't a comms guy. He wasn't Bannon, didn't know anything about politics.
Bannon
ran a fucking
new quote news quote journalism website. Bannon knows when he's fucking on the record and when he's fucking not.
Of course.
I buy this 0% buy that Steve fucking Bannon didn't know he was on the record with this company. It's not possible to me that he did not think he was on the record. It's
yeah, you'd have to think there was some kind of method to the madness, but it doesn't, you know, I'm not going to waste time analyzing it. It doesn't matter. He's out. He's back at Breitbart.
I'm just saying.
Whatever his reasons are.
I don't buy the story. Oh, he didn't know he was on the record. He's a fucking quote journalist.
It'll be crazy if he didn't, right? Scaramucci, I could totally buy he didn't know.
Scaramucci is an idiot. Steve Bannon ran a newspaper or a website or whatever.
And he knows if anybody called any of his reporters, whatever they say was going to go in print.
Yeah.
Immediately.
He knew he was out. He did some damage before he got out and he was out.
And now,
the question is, Trav, is he going to do more damage?
To who? To Trump? He will, but he'll do it in the way he thinks he's helping him. Steve Bannon really believes that this...
You think he's a true believer or you think he's power hungry?
Oh, I think
hungry?
He is.
You
I think?
Think
he is. I think he believes in the whole silent majority thing. He believes in this mixture and what he believes in there, it's along the Bernie lines, that there's this mixture of ethno-nationalism and anti-globalist economic... Yeah. Anxiety that especially appeals to white people and working class white people, and like maybe not as extreme as actual swastikas in the street, but enough, you know, ethnic resentment to dog whistle. And so
do you think, and my question, I guess, is do you think that he's a true believer in that he actually believes in like white disenfranchisement?
Yes.
And shit?
Well, here's another thing that Bannon said that was really interesting in his quote off the record. He said, he basically repeated verbatim that thing you just read from the 4chan boards.
Oh, fuck.
Like, oh yeah, no, those Nazi guys are fucking idiots. And
don't do that.
They're idiots.
Of course. No, right. We're just talking about protecting our culture
and stopping immigration and making it more white. That's where Bannon is. And that's what he said. And people took that the wrong way. He's like, oh, he criticized the neo-Nazis. It's like, no, he came with
This is why I'm like, read what they're saying to them, each other, because pay the fuck attention.
Right.
Pay the fuck attention because they are going to try to covertly do this and they might do it. So pay the fuck attention to this shit.
So I think I don't know exactly what Bannon's thinking, but I think his targets are going to be the Republican establishment. It's going to be Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell.
You don't think he's going to have a sad that he got fired?
No, I think he
knew
he was
out for a while. And there's a weird, interesting narrative that Breitbart has put out that literally when he got fired, the headline was Steve Bannon resigns from White House.
Sure.
So they're putting out this narrative that he didn't get fired. He resigned.
Of course.
But that's interesting because then he doesn't have a reason to attack Trump because he resigned.
No, that's what some people think. Like, oh, he's going to go after Trump. No, he's not. His targets are, well, us, of course, the liberals.
Yeah,
and
he was
the,
me dead and you dead, for
but,
sure.
But really, the Republican establishment, and it's going to trigger, finally, we're actually going to have the GOP civil war. Like, they played nice enough when Trump won, and they thought they could get past the tax cuts, and now it's flat-out war. The Republicans just aren't going to work with Trump on anything.
Yeah.
And the Breitbart wing is going to declare war on them. And they're probably going to push crazy...
You think more than us? Because we're not really much of a resistance at this point.
Oh, no. They have all three branches of government.
Exactly.
Now, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan like to talk about Democratic obstructionism, as does Trump. But the reality is they can't get any of Trump's agenda through because other Republicans won't let them.
Right.
So it only makes sense that the target of his ire is going to be Ryan and McConnell and...
Because those are the people actually... Because here's what I said to you earlier. Like, Steve Bannon is a monster, but he's not an idiot.
Right.
He's smart. And he knows that if he really wants this agenda to be pushed through, like, he's not fighting Democrats. We don't have any power. We don't have to convince Democrats to do anything.
No, so Bannon...
You would have pushed Republicans to pass garbage because Democrats don't have... They're all going to vote against you every time. Doesn't matter. Right? The Republicans are the people that you have to poke and prod and pinch and...
So I think the actual full-on GOP civil war is coming.
Okay. But it won't be against Trump, you don't think?
No, no, no. It'll be... Okay. Breitbart, for the most part, I think is going to totally take Trump's side and say, look at these horrible cuck establishment Republicans standing in the way. I mean, it's just what makes sense. Like, why would they turn on Trump? Like, that's Trump holds the key to their movement. These are the Breitbart people. Right. This is what pushed them over the top.
No, I
with,
had
with
a
an
different...
assortment of very extreme people like David Duke and the Nazis.
Which they embrace.
Which they, well, yeah, they embrace to a point. But, like seriously, go back and reread that. Was it on 4chan that you read that the guy screamed about how we have to be like careful Nazis?
Yeah. Covert.
And read the comments that Bannon said to Kuttner. And they're basically verbatim. They're basically the same thing.
Yeah. I was thinking that he was going to be like, you know, sort of petty and maybe lash out at Trump. But I think that you're right. Because he has a larger goal.
No, that doesn't make any sense.
Trump doesn't matter to him, right?
Trump was a vehicle.
Trump doesn't matter. Trump's a vehicle. Everything's a vehicle for his agenda.
Yeah, right? It was a vehicle to his white ethno-populist
agenda. Yeah, you're right. I was thinking about it in different terms. I was thinking about him as though he were Trump, as though that... You know, he wouldn't let this go, but I think that you're right that he...
No, especially now that the wing has seized power that is...
Yeah. No, he has an agenda. He's had it before Trump. He'll have it after Trump. And whatever he can do to get that agenda
passed... Look, Bannon hates Mnuchin and Cohn and Tillerson. And these are all, in his mind, awful globalist cucks.
Yes.
So...
that word, I just...
And
so
not
weird.
To mention Ryan and McConnell and Lindsey Graham and then, you know...
You know, maybe he did resign. Maybe he was like, look, if John
Kelly's going to be in the White House.
If John Kelly's going to cut off access to you and I have no access to you anymore, there's no fucking point in me being here anymore.
Yeah.
Fucking point. Like, why? If I have to go through this fucking general military dude who has fucking morals and honor and shit, like, fuck it. I'll just go back to Breitbart.
Right.
I'll push your agenda there.
It could be. It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter either way.
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
It also doesn't change who Trump is.
Gorka's probably next because... Gorka is just more trouble than he's worth, and there's no there's no shortage of
literally,
establishment Republicans on the Hill that are just anti-Muslim enough already.
What is he doing literally? Like, what is his job? I don't know. He's just a mouthpiece for white supremacism in the White House? Like, what does he do?
Yeah, for super advanced Islamophobia. Like, there's plenty of Islamophobia to go around throughout Republican Congress. Yeah. You don't need Gorka. He's just bad press. So Gorka's next.
Stephen Miller has
to be. Miller's, I think, untouchable.
Why?
Because he is the only, I use the word intellectual in massive air quotes.
Yeah.
But he's the only intellectual force left to try to make the argument and literally pen the things like Muslim bans and all this other shit
that's
part of the agenda.
I mean, he really is. Like, I'll admit, I've gotten a little obsessed with him and I've done a lot of research.
I know, he is dreamy.
Fuck off. I think he's literally like the devil incarnate, but
he's a scary looking dude, man.
He is scary in so many ways, but I've really like done a lot of research on him and he's the real deal. He's like,
and
he's
racist.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
This is not a political ploy to get a base like Trump.
Yeah.
This guy, he's my age. He's 34. I think
he's younger than that. I think he's like 31 or 32.
He's around my age range. And he's been doing this shit since college and before then. And this guy he's not doing this for political ploy. He believes that white people are the superior race.
Yes, absolutely.
And should have their own country and ethnocentrism. Like, this guy he's not doing this for any reason other than he really believes this is true.
And he's not going anywhere. He's not enough of a lightning rod as like Gorka is.
Which I don't understand.
Maybe he will be eventually. If he gives a few more press conferences like the one he did the other day when he was like, don't read the Statue of Liberty because it's just some meaningless poem that a communist Jew wrote. Well, he didn't say Jew, but...
Well, that was what the subtext was.
Yeah, of course. Yes. But remember, white people like those friends you met last night, if you don't spell it out for them, they don't hear it,
which is what's so interesting about the cross-sectionality of like reading that 4chan thing that the white supremacist wrote and then talking to these white ladies was like, oh my God, you're the normies they're talking about. Mm-hmm. If I don't spell it out for you, you don't get it.
But if you see somebody waving a swastika in your face, you do.
Yes.
But so that's what it takes.
So don't do that is what the white supremacists are saying. Yeah. Don't wave a swastika in their face or they're going to be mad at you. Just do things incrementally.
And again, their problem is just like us with the Bernie people.
Yeah.
And I hate lumping them together, but
I don't.
The problem with the 4chan guy is you can't get people motivated unless they are carrying torches and yelling the N-word and Jews go home and crap. Like, yeah. Otherwise, what fun is it? That's not going to inspire them. Yeah. Well, let's very incrementally make the country whiter. Like, no.
They don't. They want. That is smart. They should do it that way if they want to be successful.
Jeff Sessions understands that.
Yes, he does. So does Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham, maybe less so, but certainly Sessions.
They're all racist.
Oh, yeah.
They are. So is Trump. This is the other thing. You know, Bannon's out. Great.
That doesn't make Trump not Trump. Did we forget the Central Park Five and the fact that a federal court fined him for discriminating against people of color and that he called Mexican rapists and said Judge Curiel couldn't do his job because he was Mexican? Was like, why are we forgetting all this that like this didn't happen? Anyway,
he retweeted the black on black tweet. Like, I mean, this guy is a fucking Bannon or no? Bannon's a piece of shit and we'll see what he does, but like Trump is Trump.
No, he doesn't get a go free card because he's got a Jewish son-in-law and he works with a lot of Jewish people.
This administration,
and he once dated a black lady. Like, no, that's not how it works.
This administration is not the way that it is because of Steve Bannon.
No,
this administration is the way that
Bannon
it
is a symptom.
Donald
he's not
Trump.
The disease.
Exactly.
And I hope most journalists understand that because
can
I
we start talking about
boy
it like
are
that.
We going to see pivot stories this weekend.
Oh my God.
Here's the pivot. Oh, Kelly's getting it under control. No, he's not.
Nope.
Anyway, we're going to talk a lot more about this in the coming weeks because there's a growing sentiment that Trump is not long for this office for a variety of reasons.
Yes.
That I think is probably more true than I thought maybe a month ago, although
me
I did
too.
Say 2 or 3 months ago that he's not going to last through the end of the year.
But I do think that there's maybe a resignation in his future.
I'd say chances are better than not that's the case.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about that next week.
We love you all.
Enjoy the eclipse. Don't stare directly in the sun. Make sure your glasses are certified and all that. And all that jazz.
Stay active. Stay tuned. Stay engaged.
And stay involved. And find us on Twitter @irreverentduo, reverenttestimony@gmail.com. Adios.